Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country, writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week, we'll be in a new town. And after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hey, listeners, and welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Vince McNally, and with me this week, as he is thankfully every single week, is my brother, friend, and traveling companion, Elliot McNally. Elliot, I feel like we're getting back to our roots with this town.
I think so too, Vince. Not only our roots, but the roots of our great-great-grandfather, Rand McNally.
Absolutely. Rand McNally was a frontiersman at heart, and he loved exploring uncharted territory. Of course, in American history, that means the Great West, headed out towards California in the great covered wagons of the time.
Yep. He got to the town we're in today, not on his own two feet, but by one of those very same wagons. And this town is claims that they originated the wagons.
Every wagon, just the wagons. And we're the reading wagons. This right from the town constitution. It says we originated the wagons.
This town basically is the birthplace of the wagons, if you can believe it.
Wagonry and righthood in all of its glory.
It's a ripe topic of conversation. We can't do it alone, Vince, so I think it's time to put this town on the map.
Great idea, Elliot.
The listeners at home, take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall map and your commemorative pushpins and get ready to stick a pin in Wagon Wheel, Kansas. Vince, for the first time in a while, we have a new Rand McNally U.S. wall map that is printed on the cover of a covered wagon.
Wow. Elliot, I'm excited after the spice paper debacle and all of the conflict it caused in Central Asia. I'm glad that we can source a well-made American product on classic canvas.
So, listeners, the wait list is very long for these, but you definitely want to get one because it is... How long would you say this is, Vince? About 15 feet? It covers an entire wagon.
Absolutely. And we have to destroy priceless artifacts of American history to create them. So, you know, supply is limited.
Yeah, Wagon Wheel has generously donated all the wagons that we use for the wagon cover maps, and we can't thank them enough for it. And at the forefront of this relationship is our guest today. He is a wagon historian in Wagon Wheel, Kansas. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, how's it going? My name is Arnold McRib.
Arnold McRib.
That's right.
Arnold McRib, along the same lines as the tasty treat McDonald's McRib?
That's right, only from time to time. Right now the McRib is not in season, but yes, that is an easy way to remember my name.
Do you have anything to do with the sandwich?
My family sure does enjoy it, I'll tell you that, but no, that is just coincidence. We actually we adopted that name when we historically our family moved out west. We adopted that name in the early 1800s.
Wow.
So the McDonald's didn't come around until several years after that.
Many severals of years later.
Many severals.
And I'm sure it's no coincidence that you and your family ended up in Wagon Wheel, Kansas, right around the dawn of the wagon.
That's right. That's right. We, my family, the McRibs, came to Wagon Wheel, Texas, Kansas, excuse me. I am drinking a little bit, I apologize, but we came to Wagon Wheel, Kansas in 1816, just 10 years after the invention of the wagon.
Wow. I was under the impression that the invention of the wagon predates most written history, but here I am learning things once again on These Parts, and let me just say, that's an impressive amount of X's on the jug that you're swilling from.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I do need to be accompanied by this jug wherever I do go. It is a homebrew, and if I don't constantly swill and swirl it every couple of hours, then, it will go bad, and it's alive in there. It's a live culture.
Interesting. Yeah, the X's on that go all the way around the circumference of the bottle.
Sort of like a Mobius X that, you know, you don't really know how many X's are involved in it.
That's right. It's like an M.C. Escher painting of X's where it just keeps going round and round and it kind of circles back into itself and you lose your perspective. It is meant to be diluted, for it is very, very potent. But again, I got to, you know. It's a hobby. I am not a brewer by trade, but I do like myself a good drink.
Yeah, it seems to be cleaning our upholstery just by being in the same room as it. But I think we're digressing right away. Let's talk more about wagons and how they were recently invented.
Absolutely. Well, it depends by what you consider a wagon. I understand. Yes, there have been wagons historically. People have often congregated in prehistoric times and travel together. I understand this, but it depends what you define a wagon as. I define a wagon as a mode of transportation that is carried by four wooden wheels with spokes. And that, my friend, was invented in America in the early 1800s.
I see. Well, you know, this is making more and more sense. Perhaps, you know, our Paleolithic brethren used a cart and the Romans rode on a chariot. But only here in America, headed out west, is where the wagon can be found. Why don't you tell us some more interesting points in wagon history?
Sure, sure, absolutely. Well, the wagon quickly took off, let me tell you. And that is not just because we were going downhill. No, no, no. We were going straight across the United States with these wagons. Now, you see, it was invented in Kansas. Up until people got to Wagon Wheel, Kansas, they were nomadic. They walked. And they figured they got about halfway across the country. And of course, at this time, they had no idea how far they were. And they were thinking, man, if this is going to go on forever for the rest of my life or until the ends of the earth, then we got to go faster. And so they tried a lot of rudimentary solutions.
Did they try riding horses by chance, sir?
They had not yet. Unfortunately, the horses, as I define a horse, had not yet been invented. These horses became known to humans, I believe it was around during the Civil War, the 1860s. I do not claim to be a horse historian. I apologize.
That's fine. We don't expect you to have mastery over all disciplines.
So yes, back to the invention of the wagon. They were really trying all these rudimentary solutions. At first, people kind of got onto big tarps, onto carpets, and they would pick one person at a time to pull. Turns out that significantly slowed them down, but they were getting the hang of group transportation, you understand.
Yes. And the carpets were square, just like a wagon bed was.
Absolutely. You could call it the base of the wagon, and that's exactly what they did, because they built it up from the carpet. You know, they used that. You know how if you were a kid and you were building a house of cards and you would just lay a layer flat of cards and then build the cards on top of that?
Exactly. Yeah, of course.
That's exactly like
fascinating.
That.
Fascinating. And now that carpet can be found today as the covering of the wagons, of course. The most well-known feature of the wagon, that beautiful bonneted top that, you know, the chitlins and the possessions, the salted pork, if you will, the cast iron stoves would sit under during these long journeys west.
That's right.
And now that you listeners can purchase for a mere $6,000 as our newest Rand McNally wall mat.
Wow, and let me tell you, listeners, you are getting quite the deal on that. $6,000 for a piece of American history, a piece of human history. Let's not forget, these are the world's first wagons that are about 200 years old.
And we've sawed them down to write maps on them. But you know what? Progress in all things, and I think we should progress on to the next segment of the show, one I always look forward to. It's called Local Legends.
Listeners, Local Legends is exactly that. It's where we talk about an individual who is famous in the town, and Vince and I, admittedly, we did some research, and we know that when you think of Wagon Wheel and you think of wagons, only one name comes to mind. Isn't that right, Mr. McRib?
That is right. Do you want to say it or do you want me to?
I would be honored if you would say it.
All right. His name is a crack Crackumpton.
Crackumpton, of
That's
course.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Not surprising to hear.
Not surprising to hear. I'm sure, for those of you who may not be familiar, which I'm not sure who I'm talking to right now, because everyone knows Crackumpton. let me enlighten our less accustomed listeners here. He is another inventor. He is credited in the 1600s. He was a very early settler of Kansas. He's credited with the true first invention of the telephone. He's the guy who did it.
So it wasn't Alexander Graham Bell.
It's a common misconception. Now, you see, Alexander Graham Bell, I'll give him credit. He did not know of crack, and he did invent it on his own. But we have found evidence in Wagon Wheel, Kansas, that Crackumpton did in fact.
Maybe you should just put that moonshine bottle down.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I gotta swill it, or else the live cultures are gonna die. He invented a crude version of the telephone, where it was a wire connected to rocks, and the vibrations would move along, and he carved cones into the rock that would capture the essence of his voice that would travel through the wires.
That sounds really barely functional, but fascinating all the same. May I ask, did he employ these inventions, and what did he call them, out of curiosity?
What did he call the inventions?
Yeah.
Absolutely. He called them the whoopsie.
The whoop whoopsie.
The whoop whoopsie, because he invented it on accident. He was actually
starting to make a lot more sense now.
That's right. He was trying really to make utensils with which to eat. You know, he wanted a bowl, he wanted a cup, but he accidentally dug too hard into his rocks that he was forging his silverware with, and you know, just holes came out the end, and then he tried to repair it by getting some string, getting some wire, and repair and wrapping around like a mummy who's trying to mummify his rocks.
As you do.
You know, this is a time before rubber cement, you know what I'm saying? So he did not have the common inventions that we have that we might use to help. So he ended up attaching these two hollowed out rocks to each other, and he went whoopsie, and then that whoopsie reverberated out the other end of the string, and that's that.
You know, there's two types of geniuses. You have your Alexander Graham Bells, who may not be that smart but work really hard, and they eventually make the telephone. Or you have Crackumpton, who has a natural gift, and he just stumbled upon what could effectively, arguably, be a telephone.
That's absolutely right. You know, they say if you put a group of monkeys in front of a typewriter, they'll eventually type out Shakespeare. And I find that version of Shakespeare to be all the more impressive than William's version of Shakespeare.
Crackumpton notoriously released 100 monkeys in Wagon Wheel to try and use his invention, the whoop whoopsie, and that went awry very quickly, didn't it?
Awry very quickly. We're talking about the invention of monkeys here.
Now, wait. Hold on. I'm not so sure that monkeys were invented, per se, as they evolved naturally over time, or am I misunderstanding this?
Can I ask you how you define a monkey?
Of course. I believe, and please, all of our biology fans out there, don't write angry letters. I'm an armchair biologist at best. It's sort of a colloquial term named for or used to name a grouping of lesser apes, the chimpanzee, the lemur, the bonobo, those sort of creatures.
Also the main ingredient of the McRib sandwich.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's why we eat them, but we don't endorse the McRib sandwich. I do endorse the McRib family, but it is it's a tough tightrope to walk.
Dare I ask, how do you, sir, Mr. McRib, define a monkey, and why was it invented, and by what means was it invented in Wagon Wheel?
Absolutely. Well, I will say, of course, the types of monkeys that you are describing, yes, I would put that under the umbrella term monkey, but I'm talking about the modern day monkey that we know and love, and that's really just any sort of bipedal animal that it looks funny in a hat and sneakers. Like the type of animal that you might put in a circus.
So that had to be invented.
That it's the invention of putting these animals in human clothes.
So
now it makes sense.
So I have to demand a clarification here, and this isn't to push back or anything. My brother looks funny in a hat and sneakers. Does that make him a monkey?
In those moments, he's a monkey.
I see.
It depends. Does he look funny in all hats and sneakers? Because that's a horrible life for Elliot.
I can't wear hats. I can't wear shoes. It's my cross to bear.
I did find it odd that you came to the studio today with uncovered feet and an uncovered head, in all honesty, because you've got quite the scar on top of your dome there.
We don't usually bring that up, Mr. McRib. He's sensitive about that. He does own a few pairs of sandals, and apparently he can wear galoshes. It's just not sneakers that he can't wear sneakers. He looks absurd in them.
That's very interesting, because you'd imagine that someone wearing galoshes around would appear more humorous than someone just wearing normal shoes.
For me, it's the opposite. It's the exact opposite.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, okay. It's I've had to live with it for a very long time, and it's almost fortuitous that this is a radio program and that you cannot see me, because listeners would be laughing throughout the entire podcast, and we don't want that at all.
No. So let's get back on Crack Umpton, and let's talk about the tragically named Crack Days, which is a celebration of crack's life. It attracts what the people in Ibiza might call drug tourism, but of a much different nature.
Mm-hmm.
Fans of Crack Umpton are called crackheads, and they love Crack Days.
They love Crack Days. They love celebrating crack. It has caused quite the dilemma in our town. I won't lie, but we will not stop celebrating it because it is our history. But yes, certainly we do get a lot of out-of-towners, I'll call them. A lot of out-of-towners who want to come and celebrate in a very different, very illegal way that I do not endorse.
I was looking through I love microfiche, so whenever I'm in a new town, I'm always diving into the microfiche. I saw some microfiche pics of Whitney Houston performing like 7 crack days in a row. Now, that is, I mean, that's a feather in your cap.
Absolutely, it's a feather in my cap. I mean, listen, what do I say? Whitney Houston is a legend. God rest her soul. I will always love her, and she will always love me in a very musical way, if you understand. We didn't know each other, but that's her song.
Yeah, of course.
For those of us who may not be assimilated. But gosh, she celebrated Crack Day in unhistorical fashion. You might say in the modern sense of the word, she invented crack cocaine.
I find that specifically difficult to believe, because if I'm not mistaken, if my history serves, crack cocaine was around for a long time, because it needed to exist for her to sort of take a liking to it.
That's absolutely right. I mean, listen, I am a believer of evolution, and crack cocaine evolved.
Perhaps this is as good a time as any to move on to our next segment, Elliot.
You know, Vince, before we do, I just want to get some things straight. I mean, Whitney Houston, we got monkeys, we have whoop-de-whoops, and telephones. Where does this all fit into wagons?
Where doesn't it all fit into wagons? Let me tell you. If we're talking the invention of the telephone, the invention of the wagon, and we're talking that Wagon Wheel Kansas is responsible for the very popular 1980s car phone. And this is something that we like to take credit for as well.
So the original car phone was a whoop-de-whoop in a wagon.
It was a whoop-de-whoop on a carpet on the ground. Yeah.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Suddenly the pieces have all fallen directly into place for me, Elliot. It's as if now I finally got like the code phrase that made it all make sense.
To me, this historical timeline is as clear as the moonshine Mr. McRib is drinking now. And now, Vince, I am more than ready to move on to our next segment. Wouldn't you like to know?
So, listeners, we love to present you the opportunity to write in to us with your specific questions, queries, and inquisitions each and every week. We read them to our guests, we have our guests read them, and we answer those questions, 3 of them on air every week. I have the first one for us, Elliot.
Great, Vince. What does it have to say?
This comes from Bonaventure in Baltimore, Maryland.
What was the name?
This gentleman's name, Elliot, I'll have you show some respect. His name is Bonaventure.
It's French for good adventure.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's right. Bonjour, and what does he have to say?
Bonaventure wonders aloud through the magic of script writing. hey, Elliot, Vince, and Mr. McRib. We've talked a lot about, he must have insight into our first few segments of the show, about traditional wagons. But what about more modern wagons? I'm thinking, of course, of the famous Red Flyer, the wagon which a child sits in and is pulled along by another individual.
So the most modern of all the wagons is, of course, the Radio Flyer.
That's right, the Red Radio Flyer, that's correct.
Mr. McRib, was that invented here as well?
The Radio Flyer was invented in Wagon Wheel, Kansas. You've got that right on the nose, yes.
Wait a second. Radios, telephones, was the original Radio Flyer a whoopsie whoop?
That's right. In the late 1800s, we're talking turn of the century, 1896, we here in town, as a group effort, we did it as the citizenry, take the classic whoopsie whoops and we put it onto a covered wagon and we strip it down for parts, and we have left just a metal bucket with a pole attached to it, and a walkie-talkie, essentially. A very rudimentary handheld radio.
I'm no electrician, but this seems to me not enough parts to make a radio.
Well, excuse me, I hate to keep asking the question, but how do you define a radio?
I think the rest of this question is self-answering. I'll instead give a shout-out to one of my favorite parts of Wagon Wheel. The public transportation here is simply phenomenal. We got in what I would call a modified rickshaw, where we sat in a Radio Flyer and a man pulled us around town.
That's right. That's right. Only the finest for our guests here in town. Absolutely.
Mr. McRib, where do you see the future of wagons headed?
Wow. If you want to pick up my book in bookstores now...
What's that book called, sir, for those who are looking for it?
The book is called Wag On, Wag Off, Where the Wagons Are Getting Off To. Boy, it is an exciting field to be in right now. Wagons are defined as having four wooden wheels. Now, what can we put four wooden wheels on in the age of the computer?
Excuse me, sir. May I intercede for just a second?
Absolutely.
When you're pronouncing wagon... It seems to me that you're pronouncing it like wheel with a silent H afterwards. I know some people have the affectation where they put the hua before wheel. That makes enough sense to me. You're also doing it on wagon. Care to shed some insight as to why?
Well, I what can I say? I am a historian. And historically, the W was actually a WH. I don't know if either of you gentlemen are... Bible readers, but in Hebrew they have a letter that is a CH equivalent. It's not a ch, it's a h. It's in the back of the throat. In America, we had a similar affectation where all W's were truly WH's, and that's not a waha, it was a simple wh.
That's surprisingly informative. All right, well, thanks for clearing that up. Please, I won't interrupt again. Tell us more about wagons.
Wagons. Well, the future of wagons and wagon wheels. I feel in the age of the computer, we can put four wooden wheels on anything. And I am of the belief that we should put some wooden wheels onto computers themselves. And that will be the world's most advanced form of a wagon.
Advanced purely because a computer is an advanced piece of technology, and by affixing wheels to it, it becomes a wagon?
Absolutely. I'm reinventing the computer.
Do you see the wheels serving any purpose? Would people be pushing their computers around? Would the computers push themselves?
Sure. Yeah, whatever you can imagine.
Man, my imagination is moving quicker than a computer with wheels on it right now. Our next question comes from a listener named Harvey in Newport, Massachusetts.
Thanks for writing, Harvey.
Harvey says that he is so excited that we're in Wagon Wheel, Kansas. He has been to the Wagon Wheel Museum and has read Mr. McRib's book several times. Wow, so you have a fan here.
Huge fan.
That's surprising, but I'm excited, yes.
Apparently, he has the only review of your book on Amazon, and he said that it didn't provide enough stars. He wanted to give it more stars.
I am flattered, sir. Simply flattered. I don't know what to say.
Another review he has on Amazon is of the 1970s thriller Deliverance. He says it's a great. I'm reading his review. He's attached it to his letter. Actually,
he sent a tiny computer.
With wheels on it.
That's right. And it looks kind of like a Game Boy Color. And it's got the Amazon page for Deliverance pulled up, the Blu-ray release of it.
So it says, great movie. John Voight was awesome. The only thing that I would have liked is if they would have mentioned the setting of Wagon Wheel, Kansas more.
Oh, no. Hmm. Hold on.
This can't be right. It was shot and set in Georgia, right, Vince?
Yeah, I think one previous writer once revealed that it was indeed taking place in Georgia.
We had to stop the call-ins because a lot of people started calling in the show and it was distracting. there's been a lot of people. We have a whoop-de-whoop right here and a lot of people have been trying to phone in to us. But again, listeners, this is not a call-in show.
I hope it's not a true whoop-de-whoop because you're not going to hear any of those calls.
Well, maybe you could speak to why a misguided fan of yours might think that the classic 1970s thriller Deliverance took place here in Wagon Wheel, when indeed it did take place in small town Georgia.
I do understand. I'm a historian. I'll do my best to venture a guess. Perhaps someone burnt a DVD of the film Deliverance here in Wagon Wheel and therefore rightfully invented the film. If I were to venture a guess, maybe that's where he got that idea.
That's a pretty good guess. Wow. Well, that seems like it clears everything up. And Harvey, hopefully you can edit your Amazon review retroactively to include that bit of insight. Mr. McRib, do you have the next question for us?
I do. This question comes from a listener named Kit. And Kit, he actually has a question for you two gentlemen.
Ooh.
And it is, out of all of the towns across America that you two gentlemen have been to, which one has been your least favorite?
Ooh.
Wow.
These are interesting. I love these meta questions where we sort of take a break from the topic at hand in the city that we're visiting and talk about something sort of like a grander scale about the show in general. I like this, Elliot.
I like it, Vince. It makes me a bit nervous that we're going to start getting a lot of hate mail from whatever town we choose. I mean, just like any good parent, we love all our children. We love all the towns we've been to, wouldn't you say?
Oh, of course. But of course, Elliot, there are some that we visited that haven't made the cut, that we haven't published or finished the episode that we started there.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. Although, I think this is episode 89, we have actually recorded 14,000 episodes of these parts, and we are very discerning about what episodes make it to air, much to the chagrin of Xander.
Yeah, I think we lost the first several years of recordings. Some of those were gold, but more recently, Elliot, what's what town that we've stopped in that we've said, hey, you know what, maybe not?
Well, there was a town, I'm remembering that it was the birthplace of some mode of transportation. It was very antiquated, like a wagon or something.
And the guy, right? I was going to say the same thing. The guy we talked to, he was this like curator at a museum or something. He kept claiming that inventions that were clearly invented elsewhere were invented in this town. And when pressed, he would say that a much more crude and ineffectual version of the invention was the actual invention.
Exactly.
And I'm back from the bathroom. Hi, gentlemen. Hey, sorry.
Mr. McRib, we gave a detailed answer, and thanks so much for writing in to you and everyone and people we didn't even get a chance to answer. Love hearing input from our fans.
And Vince, next, I want to hear some input from you in what I believe is your favorite segment, The Weekly Where's Vince.
That's right, listeners. It is my favorite segment, not just because I'm a raging narcissist, but because I love to take a more intimate investigation of the neighborhoods of the cities that we visit. I spend my whole week there getting to know the people, the places, the things. This week, super illuminating. I visited a couple neighborhoods in the outskirts of Wagon Wheel. Wagon Wheel, of course, subscribes to the Wagon Wheel building plan of urban planning, where you have a city center and then neighborhoods going out in concentric circles from that.
Ah, so you have the center radius and then the spokes emanating outward.
Most definitely, Elliot. I would love to hear, Mr. McRib, your take on some of these neighborhoods. I, of course, first started in a little neighborhood called Union Station.
That's right. Union Station is the third concentric ring in Wagon Wheel. And boy, it is a personal favorite. It is where, had the Civil War extended into Kansas, we would have stationed the Union soldiers.
Exactly. That is its historical name, and now it's famous for being home to station wagons.
That's right. That's right. These are where we keep the wagons that have ridden their last ride. So they are, we like to colloquially, we call it the wagon graveyard, Union Station.
So what are some famous wagons that are there that have ridden their last ride that had to be retired?
Off the top of my dome, my favorite was Sky and the Moon. That one was quite the wagon, for it did not have a cover at the top. It was a stargazing wagon. And so, you know, it was a popular first date wagon where children in the early 30s, late 1930s, and we're talking Dust Bowl era, would climb into this wagon and they would lay on their back and stare up at the stars, and a horse would pull them around town until they got very lost, and then they'd have to use the stars to figure out their way home. It was actually school in that era.
Well, and of course, wagon covers do serve a purpose, and the wagon had to be retired because after so many rainstorms and people drowning in the bed of the wagon, they decided it was too dangerous to not have a cover on.
That's right. There was an epidemic of young kids, teenagers, on their very first date, their very first romantic excursion in the 30s, who refused to get out of the wagon while it rained, and they drowned to their death.
Truly tragic tale. I did love my time at that particular station grave. I think my favorite stationed wagon is one with a really strange name. It's called the Buick Skyhawk.
Vince, what is the Buick Skyhawk? Paint a picture for us.
This stationed wagon, very strange, had a metal frame. I think most wagons here have a wooden frame. Isn't that correct?
That's right. That's right. We are traditionalists, but you're right. The Buick Skyhawk does have a metal frame. Do go on.
Beyond that, it also had strange glass panels around the exterior. So it seems like that was meant for the people who are in the wagon to be able to look out from the wagon.
That's right.
Now, on the front of the wagon, where the horses would be attached via yoke, there were two lanterns.
That's right. Two lanterns, electrical lanterns, actually.
And if I'm not mistaken, Wagon Wheel invented the electrical lantern.
Absolutely they did. And it's because it was right here with this Buick that the electrical lantern was first used in human society.
Well, that's all very fascinating. And you know what? I think what's beautiful about Wagon Wheel is that you don't discriminate. All types of wagons, stationed or otherwise, get their time in the sun here.
You don't want to leave too many wagons out in the sun, though, because they will burst into flame.
Mm-hmm. We use a very dry wood here, yes.
Of course. Now, Union Station was fun and all, but I think one of my favorite locations was the recreational district here in Wagon Wheel. We call that Bandwagon.
This Bandwagon, it is popular sometimes, during some times of the year. And it's other times of the year people don't even really notice.
Vince, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is where the whoop whoopsie took off because so many people decided they liked it and nobody wanted to be left out. So people started singing its praises in this neighborhood.
That's right. It's home to many will be eventual famous inventions because no one wants to feel left out. Also hosts a stadium, but no home team. Only away teams come to play in this stadium.
So you guys don't have any sports teams of your own?
No, we don't have any sports team of our own, but we are big sports fans. So we bring in two away teams, and we have them play each other, and no one really roots for the home team because there is no home team to root for. So whichever team wins, everyone is just on that side.
That's a really, honestly, it seems like it makes a lot of sense. So you're always in a good mood after the game.
Yeah, I don't understand why people pick teams for sports, because it just seems like an equation for heartbreak. I feel great after the Patriots win the Super Bowl year after year after year, and they, you know, they are not the most sympathetic team to root for. I like rooting them for them one day a year in February, right after they've won the Super Bowl, and then the next day I don't pay any attention to
them.
You know,
I've heard that 85% of all Patriots fans live here in Wagon Wheel, in the Bandwagon District.
That's right. That's right. They hopped right into the bandwagon, and let me tell you, they don't show any sign of leaving.
Well, those were some of my favorites, Mr. McRib, but maybe you have a neighborhood that I didn't get to visit that you think is interesting.
Sure. You know, it's a smaller district, but one of my favorites. I call it Salt and Pepper. It's the Salt and Pepper District.
Oh, interesting.
And it is a salty district, let me tell you. It is a home of some fine cuisines of the neighborhood. It is Kansas original cuisine.
Oh, really? Well, I'm kind of a foodie myself, so would this be like Kansas barbecue?
Absolutely. This is Kansas barbecue. I'm talking, you know, fried rib, you know, beer battered chicken wings. All the Kansas originals.
Interesting. What is there to do besides eat in this neighborhood? I mean, my brother Elliot, he's a foodie, but he can only eat. What is it this week, Elliot? What's your specific diet?
Well, I can't eat meat, and this week I've tried to eliminate vegetables as well.
Right. So he just breathes very deeply and tries to suck nutrients out of the air that might be clinging to dust particles nearby.
Well, I mean, Salt and Pepper is a great neighborhood to do that in because there is spice in the air. Let me tell you, they use it liberally, and it is a windy little vortex of a neighborhood. So. You go in there, you're going to get yourself a mouthful of cucumber.
Well, just make sure you don't catch an errant bay leaf, Elliot, because that would violate your diet.
As I've been walking around town this week, I can't breathe too deeply because the dust and sand might get in my lungs, and that's too much nutrients.
That's right. Wow. Can't have that, Elliot.
Well, I, for one, would love to know how to get to the Salt and Pepper District.
Great idea, Elliot. Should we explore that in a micro segment we call How Did We Get Here?
Listeners, How Did We Get Here, of course, is brought to you by our sponsor, Map, the Map app, the app that's a map. This week, the featured feature, Vince, I'm very excited to talk about.
Oh, I love the featured feature, Elliot. Please tell me more about Map, the Map app, the app that's a map.
This week, Map, the Map app, the app that's a map is proud to introduce filters in their app.
Well, that seems strangely relevant and topical.
Now it's sort of de rigueur of social media platforms and apps to add these different filters. And you might be thinking, wow, that's pretty cutting edge for Map, the Map app, the app that's a map. But what they mean are automotive filters that you would put in your car. And that's because the app was overheating so much that they decided to purchase a small Jiffy Lube and send you a car filter with your purchase of your app in case your car overheats.
Well, see, that's very thoughtful, especially because regardless of the interior electronics of your phone, it always seems to belch some sort of black smog when you fire up Map, the Map app, the app that's a map.
That's
all
true.
That aside, perhaps, Mr. McRib, you could punch in the location to that neighborhood and see what our app tells you to do.
Sure. Sure, let me pull my phone.
Ooh, that's a smoggy release.
Yeah, I can't even see you anymore.
Ooh, mixed with the moonshine fumes, get a little lightheaded.
please, if you don't mind, I'm just going to swill my moonshine for just a moment here because that is going to contaminate.
All right.
Wow. And the app it's pulling up Wagon Wheel Kansas. It's very hard to look at the map on the screen because all the neighborhoods are concentric circles, and it seems to have spiraled the app into an uncontrollable spiral. It just keeps flying around in a circle.
You know, sometimes there's a little loading circle on the screen of your phone. The whole map itself is turned into one of those.
Good Lord. Yeah. My phone itself is spinning.
It can't distinguish between the app and the loading spiral.
Software and hardware, the distinguishment between those two has not been coded into the app.
So if you could read just a few directions from the nearest highway to the Salt and Pepper District. What does the app have to say there, Mr. McRib?
All right. Well, first, the app has to say that it wants us to make an immediate sharp left turn, followed by another immediate sharp left turn. It seems very confused. I think it's taken me just inside the very first concentric circle over and over and over, which is just one small little roundabout in the center of town.
Well, I mean, usually the Midwest and its towns are very grid-like in structure, so it's understandable that the map would have some trouble with Wagon Wheel Kansas.
It's interesting, you talk about the filters on the map app. And I see here that it does have a Wagon Wheel Kansas filter, and I am happy to claim map is an invention of Wagon Wheel Kansas.
All right, before we get into some pretty severe copyright trouble, Elliot, I think it's as good a time as ever to launch into our final, and you know what? We have our favorite segments, but this is the one we can all agree on, Elliot.
Didn't you say your favorite segment was the Weekly Where's Vince?
Yeah, well, I have many favorites, Elliot.
Oh, that makes sense. Just like all the towns we visit, this is one of our favorite segments, Did You Know?
So listeners, we know that in this day and age, you don't always have time for a full podcast. Sometimes you need a rapid-fire fast fact trivia segment where we fire five fast facts back and forth. We have time for five each and every week, and I think, Elliot, I think we should start with our guest this week.
I think so, too. Do you have the first Did You Know fact for us, Mr. McRib?
Sure. Did you know that Wagon Wheel, Kansas, is home to the very smallest praying mantis in the world?
Kind of a non sequitur.
Well, you know, it can't all be about the accomplishments of our citizens. Sometimes we just have a bug.
I'm learning that very little about this town has to do with wagons or wagon wheels. So
please tell us more, Mr. McRib.
About our small little praying mantis?
Yes, please. I'm interested.
Well, we call them giant as a little joke.
That's cute.
And, we have them on display. The students in our school, they keep them as a class pet. And he's tiny, microscopic, you know, just a tiny
little microscopic.
Bug. Very, very small. I feel like you could see him with a magnifying glass. Maybe microscopic is a bit of a hyperbole, but he's a tiny little guy. And the Guinness Book of World Records have taken some voicemails from us, and we are waiting any day now. We think this is going to be validated as the world's smallest praying mantis.
I hate to alarm you, but while I was walking around town and trying to inhale my lunch, I felt something in the back of my throat. You said he was microscopic, right?
Yes.
Well, I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be fine.
Please, this praying mantis is a hero in the community.
I'm sure he'll turn up. I definitely did not inhale him.
Okay, because he's very hard to look for. If you just, can you throw up right now? Please throw up.
I'll try. Is that him?
I don't have a microscope on me, so
hold
I can't
on, let me sure let me go get my Rand McNally microscope, and here it is.
Thank you.
And okay, yeah, well, he might be dead there, Mr. McRib.
This is a devastating day for all of us here in Wagon Wheel. I would appreciate it if you gentlemen might deliver the news to the school children for...
I'm going to go ahead and say, Mr. McRib, that that's well outside of our duties as host of this podcast. So we'll be leaving immediately after this episode's done being recorded.
And I will say that I did not know that. And unfortunately, I do now. But did you guys know that all forms of communication are delivered via those Oregon Trail gravestones in Wagon Wheel, Kansas?
Oh, really, Elliot? That seems inefficient.
Originally, they were just obituaries. You know, mm-hmm. Those grave sites, you stumble upon them while you're playing Oregon Trail, and they tell you who died of dysentery or whatever. But the people Wagon Wheel, aside from the whoopsie, thought that it would be great to make this the most effective means of communication.
Interesting.
I guess I'll just have to write out my own placard letting the school children know about their praying mantis hero.
I would appreciate that. And yes, it is the most efficient mode of communication. Absolutely. I know that a lot of you fellas out, you know, on the coasts have cell phones and you text. But here in the heartland, we believe that there is nothing as trustworthy as a slab of rock.
Tough to argue with that. Guys, I didn't know that. But did you know another Guinness World Record is stationed right here in Wagon Wheel, and that is the longest consecutive unicycle. What do you call a unicycle stint of unicycling?
I don't know. This is your Did You Know
performance. Yeah, performance is what I would call it. The Did You Know fact piece of paper kind of trails off right at the end.
I tell you that you don't have to write these down. You should be off the cuff things.
Yeah, that's really it. I mean, it's just a mechanism to fight against stage fright. Anyway, the longest consecutive unicycle performance is right here in Wagon Wheel.
Do they use wagon wheels as unicycles?
They do. In fact, they use four wheels. So it makes it a lot easier to I'm imagining so the balance issues in a unicycle are kind of mitigated a bit by having four wheels in a square pattern.
So it's more like a quadricycle than a unicycle.
Well, I guess it depends on how you define the word unicycle, Elliot.
How would you define it, Mr. McRib?
I would define a unicycle as any cycle that it uses one wheel at a time. So if you are using a wagon to unicycle as a verb, to unicycle, then you just got to make sure that you're tipping it over to one corner. And that's a unicycle.
Now, suddenly this sounds a lot harder than just normal unicycling. So maybe this is even more impressive.
Maybe this should be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well, it is already, Elliot. So I don't know if it should be or shouldn't be. I don't work at Guinness, but there it is. Elliot, why don't you have the next one for us?
I will, Vince. Did you guys know Wagon Wheel Kansas tries to update historical and pop culture events focused on different types of vehicles to include wagons?
Interesting.
So the reason I know this is because I visited your museum, Mr. McRib, where you have a small diorama of the Fast and the Furious set that you created, but instead of all the muscle cars, you included wagons.
That's right. That's right. And that's just a little bit of wish fulfillment on my end, for sure. You know, the car has become such a popular mode of transportation, and we here in Wagon Wheel just see things a little differently, and that's why I create these dioramas, and I spend, a good 6 or 7 months out of the year creating stop-motion recreations of the Fast and the Furious movies with little models of wagons.
I watched one of these at the museum, and you cannot tell the difference. I mean, I'm seeing Dominic Toretto in front of my face driving a wagon. I can't tell the difference.
That's right. And wouldn't you know, that little guy's made of Play-Doh.
Wow. I have to say, I watched your rendition of Fast and the Furious 3 Tokyo Drift, and it brought a tear to my eye. You'd think that a lot of the magic would be lost when viewing it in stop motion. That's just not true.
That's not true. And in all honesty, I took a little liberties with Tokyo Drift, and I kind of made it fit better into the timeline of the franchise. And now, you know,
critique. Uh-huh.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's both an homage and a critique. And Lil Bow Wow is now, in my version of the franchise, a central character in the entire story.
I think we can all agree that that's solely an improvement.
That's for the best.
Mr. McRib, do you have the final Did You Know fact for us to bring us home?
Absolutely. Did you know that the film, Orson Welles' film, Citizen Kane, took its inspiration for Rosebud from a wagon from Wagon Wheel, Kansas?
I actually did know this, but I know that there was a lot of controversy because at the last minute, the director decided to take the wheels off of Rosebud and make it a sled, which is very frowned upon in Wagon Wheel.
Highly frowned upon in Wagon Wheel. It is the only part that defines what a wagon is. It is its four wheels. You take one wheel off a wagon, and that is no longer a wagon. And they took all four off.
Blasphemy of the highest order.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we did attempt to try and convict Orson Welles for this blasphemy, for this blasphemous act, and he just avoided our fair city.
You tried and you succeeded of convicting him of treason. If he were ever to pass through the city limits of Wagon Wheel, you could legally hang him, but he wisely kept away.
But he had his last laugh when he broadcasted World of the Worlds in the town of Wagon Wheel to combat any would-be aliens, burned itself to the ground.
Right. He tricked us twice. And you know what? Trick us once, shame on us. Shame on him. Shame, tick us twice, shame on us.
I think you're out of moonshine there, Mr. McRib, and that signifies as much as anything. Time to move on to our final segment, Elliot.
Wish You Were Here.
So listeners, Wish You Were Here is our audio postcard from us to you, from the town that we're staying in. It goes a little something like this. dear listener, wish you were here in Wagon Wheel, Kansas.
A town that claims the origin of all wagons and wagon-related history.
And indeed claims to have invented most things in American history, including the telephone, called the whoop-whoopsie, and the monkey, which most would imagine is a biological creature that can't be invented.
A town that is always on the cutting edge of wagon technology.
A town where you can always get where you're going as long as you have four solid wheels beneath you.
And a town with a premise as sturdy as the wagons it creates.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Hey listeners, hope you learned all you wanted to know about wagons and their origins this week, but next week, we hope you'll join us again when we're in Kenzie's Gulch, Tennessee.
I think I know less about wagons after this week's episode, but you should join us for Kenzie's Gulch, where we're in a town determined to be known as the birthplace of just one famous person, literally any famous person. It hasn't happened yet, but maybe we'll get to see it happen. Join us next week.